Hello and welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Amanda Hayes. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Anna. Hello, everyone.
And this week we've been reading Wild Abandon by Emily Bitto. But first, book news. And because, it's been so long since we caught up, there's whole backlog of news. But let's whip through it. So very exciting. The Women's Prize winner has been announced since we last caught up. And that's in Australian terms, it's about $50,000 prize for the best novel written in English by a woman. And that has been awarded to The Book of Form and Emptiness by Ruth Ozeki.
Right.
So wow. Murphy's Law, Amanda, it's the one book on the shortlist I had not read. So I think the others included Great Circle by Maggie Shipstead.
Oh, yes.
Sorrow and Bliss by
Meg Mason. I like that.
And now the other ones have just gone out of my head completely. But I'd actually read most of the shortlist and this was the one. I think Annie has read The Book of Form and Emptiness, but it's a boy who's grieving, I think, the loss of his father, and objects in the house start to speak to him and he finds it all a bit noisy. And so he finds refuge in the public library where it's a bit quieter and things still speak to him, but it's more hushed tones, and he makes perhaps some friends there, or I'm not sure. But Ruth Ozeki is also, apart from being an author, is a Zen Buddhist priest. So she brings some Zen mindfulness into her books.
That explains the title too.
Yeah. So it does intrigue me.
Me too. Now that I know that, actually.
Also in awards, the Miles Franklin shortlist has been announced. And it still includes Bodies of Light by Jennifer Down, which is Annie's tip to win the Miles Franklin.
I see.
Yes. So there you go.
How's Annie's record at tipping winners?
Well, she's a jinx.
Oh, dear.
So it doesn't bode well, but she has really strongly, I think we're going to read it because she recommended it so strongly. I felt that I have to read it now. And there was also this strange story that The Dogs by John Hughes, which had been on the long list, was withdrawn from the long list because there was plagiarism in it. So
goodness.
He had copied extracts from a book by Svetlana Alexievich, who was the Nobel Prize winner, who writes this. I think Secondhand Time was one of her books, if I've got the same author. This was a different book he'd copied pages from, but also he'd used extracts from all sorts of other authors, including books like Anna Karenina by Tolstoy and others, which he says he did deliberately to create a sort of collage effect of other works.
But he didn't credit them properly,
but then
or
he didn't acknowledge it at the end, which I don't understand why he wouldn't have done that. And the publisher's really embarrassed. So Terry Ann White has given a statement saying, I should have pushed him harder to do that acknowledgement. I feel like it's a breach of trust. But it's standard procedure. There are often in a novel, not often, but sometimes in a novel, the author is deliberately paying homage to a genre or to a style of writing or to some of the classics, for example, and it's just as something that they would acknowledge either with a bibliography or by saying, you know, references include or
yes, I don't understand
why you wouldn't
exactly
do that.
Because it's an easy thing to do and it's not something you can pretend you didn't know about.
No, that's right.
No, that's interesting.
So he thought he was taking a more artistic license, I think, where perhaps he wasn't quoting word for word, so he thought it didn't need that. But I think if in doubt, just acknowledge. What have you got to lose?
Yeah, no, that's a very, very interesting.
Yes.
I want to look into that story more now.
There you go. But anyway, the Miles Franklin shortlist is out now, but the winner, I think, is still a few weeks away. Now on to our book of the week, Wild Abandon by Emily Bitto. So Emily Bitto is an Australian author and she's a poet as well, and I think she's also written nonfiction. She's based in Melbourne and she also owns a bar called Heart Track and Vine. Heart Attack and Vine in Carlton. And she's best known for her work The Strays, which was her debut novel that won the Stella Prize in, I think, 2015 or 2016. And that was a book set around the Heidi Art School. So back in the day where John and Sunday Reid had a house, and nurtured artists, and from which some of the most famous Australian artists came out of that school.
Sidney Nolan.
Sidney Nolan, Charles Blackman and others. And it's now a museum, so well worth a visit if you're in Melbourne. But Emily Bitto set her novel The Strays in and around that, and that won the Stella Prize for women's writing. And this is her follow-up novel. So it's been some years in the making, but she did explain in the meantime she bought the bar, so she was quite busy working 90-hour
weeks.
Yes,
I saw that.
At Heart Attack and Vine. But she then read an article in 2011, actually, so the seed for this novel goes back that far, about a man in the US who kept wild animals, and there – and I haven't read the article, and she doesn't like saying what happened to it, because it can be a plot spoiler, but it really grabbed her attention and her imagination, and she kept trying to think of ways to write about it. Then she won the Stella. She then had opportunities to go to Rome and also the US. So she got some grants to write. So she had 6 months in Rome. She also had a research trip to the US. So she decided this was an American story, but she needed to bring an Australian perspective to it. So Will is a 22-year-old Australian young man who is going through a heartbreak. He's had a breakup, and he goes to New York. And so the first part of the novel is Will in New York, where he crashes on a mate's couch and gets into the art scene there because his mate is going out with an artist, and then he wants to hit the road. He wants to do some sort of epic road trip and he ends up in Ohio in a small town that she calls Little Proud, which is it's a fictional town, but in Ohio, and there he meets Wayne, who's a veteran from the Vietnam War and keeps wild animals. So I think he has 52 wild animals, and they're tigers, lions, panthers, leopards,
bears, and macaques.
And there's, are they macaques and apes or monkeys?
And
you know, monkeys?
Wolves even? Anyway,
lots
exotic animals.
Lots of exotic animals. And you're allowed to do this in the States, apparently.
Yes, that was one of the things that she found fascinating, because when she read the story that you referenced before, which I also have read, she thought, well, how can you possibly have all these exotic animals? And there's no law prohibiting it. It's a world that I know nothing about.
So it's quite bizarre. So Emily Bitto wrote this before the show Tiger King. So now people are much more aware of it. But that was just something that I think surprised both of us and surprised Emily Bitto as well. So that's really the premise for the novel. It's received amazing reviews. Mm. What did you think, Amanda?
I loved it, Anna, and there's a few reasons why. Probably the main reason I loved it is I just love the way she wrote it. In contrast to a lot of novels these days, which are quite minimalist and spare, this one is the opposite. It's opulent, the sentences are elaborate and involved and long, and I found myself having to reread the sentences sometimes to think, oh, what did she say? Because it was such a long sentence. But it's just so lyrical and beautiful, and she described this book herself as in the Baroque style, and I think that's a perfect description. So that's one of the reasons I loved it, sort of almost no matter what the subject was, I just loved the way she wrote. And then I really enjoyed the New York section, because Will, the protagonist, he immerses himself. You can remember being 21 or 22 and not quite sure what life is all about, and we've all suffered from that, you know, first love and heartbreak, and so I could really identify with how he felt. And he arrives in New York and he sort of plunged headlong into this hedonistic, crazy life of parties and drugs, and you know, just he spends all his money, and I just thought, wow, that's a world that I've not really personally participated in. So I really loved reading about it. And then the second half of the book, where he goes off to Little Proud in Ohio and ends up working at what's it called, Wayne's Wild Kingdom, helping feed and tend to the animals, is so different from the first half of the book. And it was, to me, it was absolutely fascinating. I just thought the whole story was so original and just so interesting. And I found, like, Will, for all his flaws of being a bit of an egotistical young boy trying to find his way, I found him engaging and I liked being in his company. So Anna's
really?
Anna's making a face at me. So what did you think?
I had so many reactions to this book. First of all, I forgot to say, but you've pointed out the hedonism. One of the things Emily Bitto wanted to explore, apart from the wild animal story, was capitalism that excess consumption. And that's an interesting theme because she talks about it in interviews as it's very of this moment and this moment that we're in where people are consuming so much.
Too much, yeah.
I think of it as something that's always happened in history, and you look at Bonfire of the Vanities by Tom Wolfe, you can go back to Great Gatsby, you can go back to the probably even before the 1920s. There have been all throughout history people living to excess. But interesting that she wanted to explore that, and it really does seep through that New York section. It's so much. He, you know, as you mentioned, he takes drugs. Well, they all take drugs, but he doesn't want to have the come down, so he just keeps taking them and you just want him to stop.
I know, it's crazy. It's crazy.
It's crazy, but I think it's probably quite common as well. Especially in that world of the bar scene, the art scene. And then Ohio is a bit of a more space. And so it's both space in obviously the landscape of where he is, but just the sense of, okay, we can breathe. And the other thing that, speaking of New York, the other thing that Emily Bitto has mentioned is that what she's hearing now from young people who work in the bar with her is that New York is where they want to go as opposed to London and Europe. And I'm curious if that is the case, and because I haven't noticed that, but not, you know, what would I know? But B, why that would be. And I just remember when we were in our early 20s, I had friends who went everywhere, you know, in both directions.
Yes.
But certainly the UK, you know, as an Australian, you could get a 2-year visa if you were under the age of 25 or 28. So that's probably why. That explains why.
Well, you could work, in other words.
Yes, so you could make it more than just a holiday. So that would explain why a lot of us were heading over to London, and I don't know if that's changed.
I'm not sure.
People are still doing that. I'm not sure. But that was just interesting, her perspective. I did really like the energy of it. I'm into it now. I have to confess I haven't yet finished it because I had a slow start getting the book, but I've got it and I'm in Ohio. And he's with Wayne as we speak. But I've really enjoyed the energy, and the prose is really rich, but I think there's a generosity to that. She's giving you every element of that description, and it's like anything, you know, you don't always want that richness, but it's a real bounty when she's describing things. And I think the observations are really spot on, and
that,
it gives you that sense of place. So you
absolutely
feel like you're in New York.
I,
you know,
so
in the bar,
felt that.
It's very textured. And even the observations of Will and his contemporaries, and there's some of the socially awkward moments and the way he second guesses himself, and the way that Paul, his friend, has offered him cocaine, but Will had his own stash. But because he took some of Paul's, he then doesn't want to then the next time bring out his own stash, because then it would look weird that why wasn't he using that? Well, hang on a minute.
Yeah. So
he gets himself into these awkward situations. I've been finding once it got going, and we'll come to the first page, but once it gets going and Will's there and he's having these parties and then on the move, it's been really propulsive. So, you know, you keep turning the page, really engaging. So I'm really enjoying it. But
and here comes the reason for the faces you were making at me.
I really had to push through the opening section. There were so many things. I think you just have to get into the style. So the first thing to note is I'm not normally a fan of that really rich, intricate, over the top, lots of adjectives kind of style as a rule. So that's a personal taste thing. But, you know, the opening page in particular, it was – so the opening sentence is, on his first night in New York City, he sought out a man to give him something – as travellers and people in end times have long done before him, some rich hyper-distilled substance to help him feel at one with the seething, glorious, doomed mass around him, or else to heighten his separateness into an exquisite reverie. Now. That's a beautiful sentence.
Yes. But.
But it is completely over the top. And it's also abstract. It doesn't tell you who it is, so she doesn't name Will.
But didn't you want to know?
So, yes, and I think there's really interesting reasons why she didn't name him. I think maybe she wanted to give the reader that sense that this could be any mythical hero on any quest over history, because she's talked about how it's such a trope that the masculine journey,
yeah,
you know, has been done time and time and time again, and she realised that this was another journey. So she really leaned into it, and I think it's deliberately he, because he could be anyone over the course of history who've been on these quests. But it is alienating, because you just give us the name, you know, just say Will landed in New York and he was trying to get some cocaine. And
but that would be so boring.
I know. So it's immediately incredibly detailed and abstract. So I found that, and it has been described as quite a dense opening couple of pages, and I found I really had to push through that to get into it. And we do, on it's only two pages and then we're into it, and she names him and we're in business. But yeah, I think just, you know, help, you've got to bring the reader along with you. And that style, it's a bit like Donna Tartt, and this is high praise for a lot of people, because most people love Donna Tartt. So I think,
yeah, including me,
if you say it's like Donna Tartt, most people say, right, I'm in, I don't need to hear any more. And indeed, I think if you like Donna Tartt, you'll love this as well. But for me, sometimes that writing draws attention to itself, and you talk about having to reread, and I found I would get tripped up, and sometimes there are words that are just repeated in the one paragraph. You know, reverent, reverent, reverent is three times in one paragraph, and that's quite jarring, because you keep seeing it and thinking, but I just saw that word just before. And so you are looking at the language rather than being entertained by the story. So that, I don't personally like it, but that's very much a personal taste thing, and she does it very well. Mm. So if you enjoy that style, it is beautifully done. I just think this sort of style, I'd like to get in there and edit it and make the book probably half as long. You know, I'd whip out every second adjective. I'd be
oh, Anna.
Because, you know, then it's not about the author showing off, look how flourishy, you know, look at my flourishes. It's,
I didn't, it's, get that sense at all.
Just give me the essence of it.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I had quite the opposite,
yes,
reaction.
And
because
most people do. I think I'm in the minority. But also it does, I think it does settle a bit. And once you get used to it, like any book, you get used to the style that it's in and you get the hang of it, as it were. You sort of get into the swing of it. And then I enjoyed it a lot more. But I did have I was doing post-it notes all over the place. Some of the dialogue I thought was a bit pedestrian.
Yeah, so yeah, I guess
are,
so.
There but are lines like Will says, it's good to be here. And Paul says, great to have you here.
And well, she's a harsh critic.
That needs to be. And then at one stage, he's couch surfing at Paul's house. Paul says, any plans for today? Nope. And then Paul gives him some ideas and Will says, okay, sounds good. And it's like, just skip to the part where they go to the next. Like, you don't need that scene, you know, to me. So I was like, I was really, unfortunately, I was getting quite impatient at some of those lines that I just thought could have come out. One other thing that was frustrating me, but I think it's deliberate, was it's a very white book. And a very white perspective keeps, and I think Emily Bitto's sort of showing us this, I think it's deliberate, but he keeps singling out the people of colour. So he'll say he saw a black man. There's one page where he sees a black man, and they haven't capitalised the black, but that's by the by. That's a style choice of that publisher. He sees a black man, and then he sees an Asian couple, and then he sees a beautiful girl. And we have to assume that the beautiful girl is white because she's not specified. Yeah. But I just found that really jarring, but I think deliberate, that she's showing that he's got no idea of his white privilege and he's just sort of a bit insulated.
Yeah.
Coming from where he, you know, country town. And he's just gone, oh, wow, there's a black person.
Well, I think it would have been deliberate, because one of the things that she is showing through the character Will is that he's trying to find where he fits in the world, and he's very acutely aware and embarrassed by the fact that he comes from a small country town. He sort of sees himself and his parents as sort of hicks, you know, and so he's kind of making these observations, and my view is the point of it would be just to show, as you said, how little idea he really does have about the big wide world out there. So I think it would be deliberate.
I think it is. And there's a lot of comments about him being naive.
Oh, he's totally naive.
And he himself...
He knows that though.
...is aware he's got the cultural cringe.
Yes.
And then he gets annoyed that that's such a cliche. So it's quite well observed, I think, all of that second guessing, all of the self-doubt that he has.
Yeah, he's riddled by self-doubt. But most people that age are, I think.
And he's got that sort of chip on his shoulder. I didn't like Will.
Didn't like him?
Not so far. I mean, maybe he comes good. But I'm finding him very entitled, very unaware of how lucky he is, very unlikable. He's sponging off Paul and he's bringing... Nothing. Like Paul says, what would you like to do today? And I think it's because he's come there on a whim after a heartbreak. So to be fair, this isn't a long planned thing. But he shows no interest in any ideas, any plans, any sites that he wants to visit, any particular foods he wants to try, any history he wants to know about. He's bringing nothing to this whole
That's true.
Experience. Mm. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He's really angry with his parents for no good reason, unless something diabolical emerges later that they have done. But so far, all the other characters are telling him, your parents are really nice, what's wrong with you? And I just can't get on board with him. But having said that, I'm not minding being in his company. I think I've just, you know, got used to him a bit now.
Yeah, I can 100% appreciate what you're saying. But I found him quite interesting because he is so different from, you know, I mean, if we went to New York, as you say, you'd be out there trying to experience it. And I thought, imagine going to a place and just sort of letting everything happen to you.
Yeah.
In some ways, I think it's sort of nice to go somewhere and just be.
Yes.
And so I did quite like that aspect of it, and to, you know, be open to trying different things without having this crazy agenda of, you know, ticking off all
the Rockefeller
and all those things. So I was, Ballarat with my daughters, and I needed a new book. And so I went into a lovely bookshop and I started picking up books and reading the first page, which is often how I choose a new book. And unlike you, I read the first page and thought, oh, wow, I really want to find out what's going on.
Fair enough. No, I know it's a beautifully written first page. Now then we get onto the art.
Oh yes, yeah.
So I have feelings about this. I don't like descriptions of art in novels as a rule. But I'm wondering, is she satirizing the art scene?
I thought so.
Because
it's so ridiculous.
So one character, I think Darla, says, and they're just so pretentious that I thought it had to be a satire, but Darla says, it's the cultural symbolism underpinning the whole thing that I'm interested in. And I thought, but I can't, I just can't. But I did read it as perhaps she was being ironic.
That was how I read it, But I'm now, as I'm talking to you, thinking, gosh, I don't think I read it closely enough.
And then the capitalism, I thought, sometimes was a bit clunky the way it was dropped in. So Veronique says to Will, who's a character he's only just met, says, well, that's capitalism. I work for the 1%. It's a bit clunky, but we get that that's capitalism, you know.
Yeah,
we understand
yeah.
that. So if you read, for example, Bonfire of the Vanities, which is one of the great, I think, novels about capitalism, I would make a bet that the word capitalism does not appear in that book.
Yeah, that's a good point, because she does say that she, one of the themes of this novel is to draw attention to the excesses of, you know, this capitalist world, particularly in, you know, in privileged circles. And also, just moving on quickly to the second part of the book, one of the things she questions that goes hand in hand with that is the arrogance of humans, you know, thinking that we can capture and control these wild animals, and what right do we have to do that? And so I think in her way she's questioning a lot of things about the way we behave.
And there are lots of metaphors with that too, I suppose, and symbolism. Now tell me, Amanda, because I'm over halfway through, so I'm well and truly in Wayne's world, as, as it were. Is there a lot more with the animals, as in because I'm not so interested in the feeding of the animals. And do we move away from...
Well... We move towards a crescendo, Anna.
Yes. Oh, so I have to keep reading.
I think you do. Whereas I actually quite liked the description of the animals, and because it made me really curious how they, because she does give quite a detailed description of how they have to get the food into the cages for the animals, and you obviously found that
I'm not into animals.
Didn't. No. Yeah. See, it really interested me. I was thinking, I wonder how they do actually do this. So
the food that they
get.
So we've just the bit that I've just read, they went to get some chicken
from the abattoir. Yeah. And
don't read it while you're eating.
No.
I'm enjoying it because it's different to a lot of other books in terms of the subject matter and the perspectives, and of course the language, the prose is really notable.
Yes,
really striking. So I'm recommending it, but I had a lot of things that are just bugbears of mine that I had to push through.
Yeah. No, it's very interesting to hear your perspective, Anna, because I tore through this book. Maybe I didn't pay enough attention, and I did love the way she writes. So
yes,
and I thought the story was just something really different and unusual, and I really enjoyed it.
Very good. Mm. Well, this is Wild Abandon by Emily Bitto, and coming up next, I'm not sure yet, so we'll have to come back to that. Amanda and I are going to go off and look at a list of what we want to read next. In the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go, or you can email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Amanda?
I am on Instagram at vibrant_lives_podcast and Facebook at Vibrant Lives Podcast.
Fantastic. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Bye.